Testing 1, 2, 3. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Do you ever lose track of what it is? Morning, afternoon.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be like, morning. It's 2. I'm like, oh.
I do that at the hotel. I'll answer the phone, and it'll be like, good morning, Hotel Blue, and it's 2 in the afternoon.
I had a lady come in here. My last client, who was a new client. I was telling her about doing podcasting, and I said that you were coming on. She goes, oh, I love the Hotel Blue.
That's nice.
Yeah, and they just moved down here from New York, but apparently they stayed.
That's what our off-season clientele has become. It's everyone moving here or looking at property from New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, whatever. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
She said she loved it. And I thought,
but then
we
lose them, you know, as clients because they buy a house.
But, you know, they'll continue to talk well about you, and like she did. So I thought that was pretty cool. If I was looking for a hotel to stay at and she had mentioned that, I'd be like, let me go check that one out.
Yeah. That is good.
Who are you? I know who you are, but nobody knows who you are.
I'm Donna DeKuyper. Do I need to say more?
Is that all you are?
No. Well, yes.
Well, actually,
that is all that I am. But
which Donna is visiting me today? Because you do carry quite a few badges.
I do have a few different badges. Oh, I'll be all of them today. I am a hotel owner with my husband Scott, Hotel Blue in Lewis.
Yes.
I am a former professional actor, singer, dancer, but I still do that stuff for free now.
So if you're not former, you're getting paid. Is that how it works?
I was getting paid until I was like 30-ish, and then we moved from LA here when we had the girls and stuff, and I was a member of Actors Equity and SAG and all the different unions that you get to join, if you're lucky, because then you make enough money. But to stay in the unions here, I wouldn't have been able to do anything.
Right.
So I let that go.
Well, because you said former, and I go, well, I just saw a show with you in it, and you did a professional job. So
Thank you. You
don't get to call yourself professional if you're not getting paid, is that?
Well, I think, yeah, that's sort of the gauge. I mean, professional theaters typically pay their actors.
Right.
And I have gotten paid some here, like Clear Space Theater pays people in the summertime.
Okay.
And I've done some shows. I did one summer show with them. But in the off season, it's a non-paid thing, except like occasionally they'll have a guest artist that they'll pay who's a union person. But at Possum Point Players, where I do most of the stuff that I do, they don't pay anybody except the musicians.
Which is weird because they charge.
Well, yeah, they've got operating costs.
Right, okay, so they charge enough just to cover the operating costs.
Because it's truly a nonprofit. I mean, you know, community theaters, that one's been around for 45 years, which is almost unheard of. Eventually, they usually lose their support. They lose the people that are going to do all the work. Our founding members are mostly still involved, but they're in their mid-70s now, and, you know, they want other people to do what they do.
Possum Point Players have been around 45 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The first show I did there was a comedy called Bedrooms, and I was pregnant with Montana.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't showing when we started rehearsals, and then all of a sudden I was, so I had to do all my blocking with my, like, forward. I couldn't turn sideways much because I wasn't supposed to be pregnant.
You just had too much pasta the night
before.
That's
right. That's right.
That's funny because I've seen you do 2 shows at Possum Point. One, when I very first got sober, because I, you know, that was the new thing I would do in my new sober life would be go to theater.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a show you did with James.
Oliver.
Maybe it was Oliver.
Yeah, did he throw me across the stage? And
I can't even remember. My brain was so clouded
back
then.
It was excellent stage combat.
Yeah.
I
remember that I went and I felt like an adult. Like, you know, wow, this is a mature thing to do because up until that point, I really hadn't done anything mature.
Well, you'd been to bands, probably you'd been to like rock concerts and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. But this was like,
I saw your hair. This
was mature. Oh, yeah. Tila said I looked like a psychopath. I was like, thanks, Tila. She never gives me an opportunity to feel good about anything, which is in a different podcast. But I remember we went and it was terrific. And I thought, you know, this is great. You know, community, small theater, and I'm friends with the person that's in the show, 2 people that were in the show, and, mm-hmm. and I'm sure, I don't really remember how well you guys did, but I'm sure it was terrific, because recently I was able to go to another show, I think that was Hello Dolly,
mm-hmm.
and I thought you were terrific.
Thank you.
And you know that. You know,
thank you. I mean, I hope so. I hope that, you know, the experience I bring with me shows.
Well, and
that'd be great.
And, you know, I'm not a theater person. So, you know, if I sat and talked to Scott, oh, yeah, we've got the, you know, the other actors. And then he
You'd
gave me all the
I
background
sucked,
story. But I'm just like, for a guy sitting down, listening, I thought, in fact, I videotaped it. But it made me, and same thing happened when I went and saw James's last show. I always get emotional. I don't know what that is. Just...
Well, that's what, you know what? You're supposed to feel that way. McKinnon and Scott can't see me in anything without crying.
Yeah.
And even if it's not a particularly sad thing, it just
well, that's family.
Touches you.
Yeah.
But I think, like, good theater does that. Good music does that. It just sort of touches you in a way that other things don't.
Well, and I think it's, I love a success story. You know, whether it's the whole life or just that, you know, because I think it was the opening night. I know, you mm-hmm. know, talking to Scott, that you'd been working on it. So, you know, I knew you had skin in the game up to that point. And I just love a success story. And I think that you sounded so well that it makes me cry. I'm just an emotional guy, too.
Well,
Sam says,
you.
Daddy, when am I going to not be an emotional guy? I go, Sam, never give up being an emotional guy.
That's right. That's, and he's you, isn't he? Sam pretty much you? We hope not in every way.
Exactly. I'm praying to God he is not like me in certain aspects. But, yeah, he's sensitive.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you're
I
an
love
artist.
It.
I mean, what you do is very artistic, and you're also really creative, and all the entrepreneurial things that you do, you wouldn't think of,
yeah,
probably, if you were an accountant.
My mom asked me yesterday, how much money do you make in these podcasts? That's the question I always get. And I said, I don't make any money. You know, I don't know why. I don't even know if anybody's listening. I just like doing this. Mm-hmm. And if there was a money or, you know, if it was about money, I don't think it would be very fun. You know?
There was a saying, and it's kind of interesting. And it wouldn't have talked me out of doing what I did. When I was, from the time I was pretty young, I wanted to do theater. And I wanted to perform and stuff. No one could have talked me out of studying it in college or going on to do it. It didn't matter how many horror stories someone might have told me.
Is that what
me.
You were took in school? Was acting?
Yeah, I was a musical theater
oh,
major.
Okay, cool.
At
I didn't know that.
Cincinnati Conservatory, yeah. So, but after I left the business professionally, I heard someone say, keep the thing that you love the most free.
Absolutely.
And so you'll never have the pressure of having to make a living from it, and you won't lose your love of it.
Right.
And do your next favorite thing as your job. So I think that's interesting.
Well, and I happen to actually love my job. I spend a lot of time in jobs that I did not love.
Mm-hmm.
And even the job that I have, which I absolutely love, still can get on my nerves. But I do love my job, luckily. And I was thinking about that when we were just talking about the guy that was down doing the interview, because I think he has to try to figure out how to make money doing that.
Yes.
And which is great. I mean, I would be a little, you know, I would probably...
it would be stressful.
It'd be stressful, and I would probably question if I'm, you know, if I'm worth any money doing this.
Right, right.
But I do, you know, I love doing this, and I first I want to say thank you. Doing it because
my pleasure.
I feel like I'm in the Mary Kay phase, you know, where I hit up all my friends and family and everybody gets the starter kit uh-huh. and then they all stop answering my phone calls. But I was, you know, living here for 22 years and I actually ended up knowing a lot of people and I have a lot of great relationships. And so I've been able to ask a lot of people and it is kind of, it's interesting, I think, to try to do a podcast because I don't think anybody thinks they have anything to offer. That's always the first thing someone says, I have nothing to offer.
You know what the beauty of this is, though? You're easy to talk to. That's all that is required.
Right, and that's the premise of it. It's just chatting.
Because everyone's interesting.
Yeah, it's just
you know,
Rehoboth
Social.
You
just have to know how to get them to talk about the stuff that is interesting to you.
You remember when the last thing I was doing when I came and interviewed you at the hotel?
Yeah, what was that? What was that?
That
for?
Was for the Rehoboth Social app.
That's right.
But I remember. Oh my God, I'm going to interview Donna. Like I'm going to interview somebody. Like this is my job, and I really have no idea what I'm doing. But here we go. And I remember we sat there and we chatted. We filmed it, and it was great. And Scott's like, you should ask Donna. I go, me and Donna would just chat all day on this podcast.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe people will hear it and maybe they won't, and, you know, who cares?
Well, and I think with anything, you know, like even a great hotel, you have to start with a foundation. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure building the hotel, you're like, oh, God, when is it nobody comes? You know, but someone shows up, and then you treat them great, and then they tell somebody, and then somebody else shows up, and you treat them great, and you just keep doing that. And then the next thing you know, you have a hotel that have people staying at it.
I really like the phrase, just put one foot in front of the other, because if you project, that's where the fear is, like the what ifs.
Right.
Montana recently got a big promotion at
Montana's
work.
Montana's your daughter.
Is my daughter, yes, my oldest daughter. And she just got a big promotion at work. She works for a nonprofit in Florida. And it's the first job, and I think we've all experienced this at some point in our careers. It's the first job that she's been thrown into where she really has no idea what she's supposed to be doing.
Right.
Now, the people that hired her must feel confident that she'll figure it out. I feel confident that she'll figure it out. But it kind of freaked her out a little bit because she just hadn't been in that experience before.
But she's capable of learning.
Absolutely. But there's no one to train her. The person that left, she manages like 500 volunteers. And the person that used to do that left the job before she could train Montana.
Oops.
So you really do have to just kind of figure it out. But we've all been there. When I got hired to be the director of the Delaware Music School, it was my first job here in Delaware. And I pretty much padded my resume, let's just say. I had no idea how to run. I mean, I knew music. I was a singer. But that doesn't mean you can run a business about it.
Right.
And I started asking around, like, you know, how do you write grants and, you know, all these different parts of my job. And it turned out no one knew anything more than I knew.
Right.
To begin with. You just sort of throw yourself into it and trust that you'll get there.
I think you can get away with stuff like that in a pre-existing business. But, like, every business that I've started, I don't know how to run a business. I do fall short in a lot of those things, like writing grants. I wouldn't even know where I would even start with that. But I can come up with a lot of great ideas since they're brand new. Mm-hmm. You know, I can do the work, but there's a lot of stuff that goes into a business. You know, I was watching something and they were interviewing the sheriff or something of the county sheriff's department. And he's like, you know, I just spend my day writing grants, you know, searching for money. I'm like, oh, God. I mean, you know, so.
That sounds horrible.
It's nice that it's an established business, but, you know, when you start something brand new, there takes so much nowadays, it seems like, to have any success, I think, for a business. And I'm kind of the kind of person that's like, oh, I made a dollar, stash it. You know, wherein I think in a good business model, you put the dollar back in, you have to reinvest that into a business to grow it, where I'm more like, I just want to, you know, hoard everything because I'm afraid I'm never going to make another dollar. So it's one of the great, I think when you get into small business like that, I think you start realizing all the different things that go into it. Was it that way with the hotel? Did you think you just build a hotel, fill it with beds, and you'd be good?
You know, that was really Scott's project.
Yeah.
And he, you know, when we first moved here, there wasn't, especially then, this is more than 25 years ago, there was no industry here, and neither of us brought typical skills with us. Scott had flipped houses in L.A., so he knew how to, you know, do some building kind of things. So he bought that little motel, the Angler's Motel, that was there on the property that we owned still.
It was more on the corner, though.
No, there was the Cape and Lopen Motel was there. We were still where we are. It just looked really different.
Yeah, no.
Because of the way we've used the space now.
It was deeper.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was on the street. I thought
there was a
the
pool,
corner.
Like he built a really pretty pool with gardens all around it, but it was still just a little cinder block fisherman's motel.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess he figured it was small enough that he could eventually know how to run it. Then my sister happened to get divorced and have a little boy right around the same time. She moved down and managed the hotel with Scott, that motel with Scott. So I really didn't have anything to do with motel anything
right.
until we built Hotel Blue. And then I'm not sure I would still be that involved at this point, but when we were like quite a bit into the project, Scott got sick.
Right.
And I had to figure out how to do more than I knew.
Well, and I think also there was a time, I mean, when the Anglers was there, I mean, you know, we used to have two Dover races. I mean, this place used to have a lot of people that would come down a couple times a year, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a hotel room available in Rehoboth. You know, like back...
Oh, we were packed at the Little Anglers. It was packed for race weekend.
Yeah, race weekend, both race weekends. It used to be a real change of, mm-hmm. of amount of people that were in town. I don't know if the popularity of NASCAR has dropped. Well, I know the popularity of NASCAR has dropped. I mean, you can just see it as they dismantle the bleachers at the track
right.
that the popularity has dropped. But there used to be a time where you couldn't get a hotel, and now... right around when you built the Hotel Blue, I think you not only, I'm not sure, I mean, I guess a race fan would want to stay there, but it's a little more of a higher-end hotel than the Angler.
The Angler's Motel was much more the race fan type of place.
Throw
than,
up over
than
the
hotels.
Rail.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We had people scaled the fish in their fish in the bathtubs.
Oh.
It got a little, and it got really rowdy.
Yeah.
And we just don't have, since we're more of an upscale boutique property, we just don't have that same clientele. They're older, mostly.
Right.
You know, so if they ever did get too drunk and scale fish in bathtubs, it was 20 years or so ago. They don't do it anymore.
Do you see, like, and I know that the hotel's like Scott's project, but I've noticed a lot, just in the last week, a lot of hotels are being built. I went and ran the beach. In fact, I dropped the kids off and then ran down to Rehoboth and along the beach. And there's a big crane. I think they're building a new hotel on the boardwalk.
That might be.
Yeah.
You know, and I know they're building one by the Crooked, I think by the Crooked Hammock.
Well, they're building one behind PNC in that small parking lot.
Yeah, right there. Yep.
I mean, do you go, oh, great. Or
no, I mean, you can't really beat our location.
No, you can't.
We're on the beach side of the canal, but you can walk into town. We have a rooftop pool no one else does in Lewis.
You can walk to the beach.
It's very specific. Yeah, we have a very specific property. So if you want quiet adult luxury in Lewis, we're it.
Lewis is definitely much more quiet than Rehoboth.
It's the grown-up beach town.
It's the grown-up beach town. What do you think? To me, personally, it seems like Lewis is in a little bit of trouble.
In what way?
Well, there's no place to park.
Well, you know where the old Cape
and Lopen
Motel.
If this is a secret parking spot, don't say it on the podcast.
No, but I always thought that when the Cape and Lopen Motel was sold, which is on the corner next to us, that the city should have bought it and turned that into a parking lot for the city.
Right.
And instead, there are condominiums on it, which we didn't. I mean, I don't think we needed them, but we did need parking, and that would have been such a great spot. Because it would be beachside, but walking into town. And it would have brought probably a little more business over to the beachside. There's not much retail there, but maybe there could be more if there was a place to park.
Well, so there's still no place to park.
Nope.
I mean, you have, the hotel has parking.
We do.
The hotel has parking. I'm not trying to say that the hotel, but just in Lewis in general. I mean, I used to like going down there, but, you know, if you're not down there at 5:30 a.m., you're not going to find a place to park. And it's, you know, there's a lot of great things that go on down there with the farmer's market or what's the other big thing they do when they sell the paintings?
Oh, the art auction at
St.
Peter's.
Yeah, the art auction. Uh-huh. And then they do
the
a lot
fair.
Of...
The art fair.
Yeah, it's like an art fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do a lot of great stuff, but, you know, 4th of July, forget it. There's nowhere to park. And it seems like just the amount of people coming down. I hope they figure it out because I've talked to several people. One lady who just got a job in Lewis is trying to figure out how she's going to get to it
because
there's no place to park when she goes to work. And I think even Rehoboth was having that same issue where a lot of the employees were coming down and taking, you know, parking spots. I think a lot of the small businesses in Rehoboth are asking or requiring, and I'm not sure on requiring, but definitely asking, you know, maybe take the park and ride in or
right.
take the bus in. And which
I know some people give their employees season passes for park and ride.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Have you, does the bus go into Lewis?
No.
Why? Well, actually, why,
well,
Donna?
I mean, the DART bus, there is a DART bus stop.
Isn't that funny? Because when somebody asks me that, I go, I don't know. Does
you
it?
Know, you know, there's so many things when you live someplace, in a, especially a tourist area.
You don't really pay attention to.
You don't do those things. There's so many cool things that I hear other people talking about that I haven't even done yet.
I will say that last year, I have lived in Rehoboth for 22 years. When my first year I was here, I went to the 4th of July fireworks because I lived in town. Mm-hmm. But I have yet to be back in 22 years. And I went to the fireworks this past summer, and we rode the bus in, and we picked the bus up by Lowe's, that new spot they built. Mm-hmm. And we rode right in, got off, watched the fireworks, got right on the bus, and rode right home.
Perfect.
I was like, wow.
How come we didn't used to do this? Well, but it wasn't available.
It
right?
wasn't available. I mean, I think that it was available, but that spot, you know, to up until that place was built, you had mm-hmm. to catch it down by, you know,
Rehoboth
Fresh
Avenue,
Market.
Yeah.
Yeah, fresh down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you had to go into the traffic to even get to the bus. Mm-hmm. Now they'll take that whole bus lane and they'll just use that. The bus just zips right all the way down.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, that's what public transportation should do.
Right.
It should relieve traffic and it should. Last year was a nightmare. There were the first year of official fireworks for Lewis on Lewis Beach. Mm-hmm. They're always like, you know, bootleg ones, but
shady.
It was the official ones this past summer.
And they had a brouhaha.
And I think wasn't there like a 3-hour traffic jam to get over the bridge?
Yeah, because.
What did you do, Tom?
I didn't do anything. Somebody got in a fight.
Ah.
I don't know. I'm not going to name the person that told me the story, but apparently there was like fisticuffs, you know, in the streets. And then the Lewis police
about
came.
About parking or just in general?
Just in general.
Drunken 4th of July stuff.
Well, I hope they weren't drinking, but they were definitely a problem. And these mm-hmm. two guys got in a fight. And basically the town of Lewis, you know, came over and shut down all the roads and broke up the fight. Instead of like, you know, grabbing each guy, you know, banging their heads together, get the freak back in your car and keep going. They made a big production out of it. Now, if I'm wrong about that, I'm sorry, but that's what I heard. Not sure why anybody would make that up. It seemed to be a small event turned into something much more, and it really snarled up traffic. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was we're right on the corner of Market Street there, and everything was stopped dead on both Savannah Road and Market. No one could get anywhere.
And you know what's funny is how long have people been shooting fireworks off in Lewis?
Forever.
Since the making of the firework.
Yeah.
Since it came over on the Mayflower. I mean, and now they call it the official firework, and now we got a traffic problem.
Right. That's right. I hadn't really thought about that. But it was always fine before. Like, you would park along the street, you'd walk down to the beach and watch, and I guess they by opening it up to the public that way, so openly, it probably messed it up.
Well, it was always, you could always go down there and walk out on the beach and watch. It was basically locals would buy fireworks and shoot them off in front of their house.
Yes.
I don't know if you own a house on the beach, do you own the land in front of the, do you own the sand?
I don't think so.
But
I don't think so.
No, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
We're unearthing a lot of great questions today here on the podcast.
I mean, you own certainly the sand underneath your house.
Absolutely.
But you can't tell people they're not allowed to, you know, swim and sunbathe on the beach in front of your house. I don't think.
I know that when we had, you know, when the kids were much smaller, we used to spend a lot of time down at Lewis Beach, but I was never drawn to go down there. I always had plenty of space in the public spot that they offered. I never just wanted to go down where the big houses were.
And we always went where the houses were. We never went to the public beach.
Because I see, like, they'll leave, you know, canoes outside and sun,
cabana things?
No, the little sunfish sailboats. Is that what they're called, sunfish?
Yeah.
They leave them all out there. So I guess, I don't know. But I wanted to, so back to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So what is, I saw Hello, Dolly. Did you? I wanted to actually finish my thought on that because now that I think about it, we went and saw James do, was it Our House?
Oh gosh, House is in the title and I can't remember the name of it.
I cried so
Wasn't
bad
that
at that
wild?
Stupid
That's
that
a
play.
Great
Not
play.
Stupid play, but that moment. I just thought that was so.
Fun home.
Telephone wire.
That was a wonderful production.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah, it was great.
Did you, have you had any opportunity to work with James since?
I have not. I worked in Oliver with him, you know, years ago. The girls were really little. They were little orphans in it. I directed He and Anne in a one-act play a friend of mine wrote after that. But it was like an invited audience. It wasn't a regular production.
You got to do the commercial.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we were very famous locally for a while.
Very famous with the commercial. The show, for you did Shell Brothers. For Shell Brothers houses.
Right, yeah, so we did that. But I guess that's about it. You know, James is Equity. He is a current member of Actors Equity, the union. So he can't do stuff at Possum Point Players unless it's a fundraiser, and then he can get a waiver for that. But he was a guest artist for Fun Home, and that's how come he was able to work locally.
He just left to Florida.
We're going to go see him. We're going to see him in A Long Day's Journey and tonight. That'll be intense.
I had him on the podcast.
Did you?
Yeah, it was great. I was like, come on, James. And he showed up. He's like, let's do it. And we had a good time. Yeah. Talked for over an hour.
He's really talented. You know, he could have made a living anywhere.
Well, and I always ask him. I'm always amazed when he just starts reciting Shakespeare, and I'm like, I can't even remember my phone number, and you're reciting Shakespeare. And I always say, you know, you're doing a great job, but I'm not really sure that, you know, I can't fact check this. You know, you may be just spewing out any, the light rolls, and I'm like, are you sure that's Shakespeare or is that James Spear?
You know what was really Jimmy Spear. Crazy to me? Did you ever go down and see him in Stanton, Virginia at the American Shakespeare Center? Well, that's a theater where they do Shakespeare in repertory, which means, like, you know, they
change. In the round, right?
Well, it's like three-quarter.
Okay.
But repertory means they're doing a few different Shakespeare plays, like, rotating. And that totally boggles my mind.
That he can remember all that?
Well, yeah. Like, he's doing King Lear one day, and he's doing something else the next, and some third show the next, and for me, I guess it's no different than my being able to keep musical stuff straight.
Right.
But I don't think I could do it with Shakespeare.
No, that's, well, we used to walk, we would go run, and I was, there was a time when I was doing a vlog with the drones and stuff, and we would walk and he'd be in it and he'd just start reciting Shakespeare. And he said something, and then I posted it. And then a friend of his is like, oh, you missed a word, James. You know, like,
he's got some tough.
I'm like, really?
For friends,
I didn't know that. So, you know, it was funny, but So he's down there now, and I feel bad that I didn't get to go to Virginia, and I feel bad. I don't feel bad. I just wish I had a little bit more opportunity to go see him because
he had really young children, though. You know what? We do what we can at certain stages of our lives, and it's complicated when you've got young kids. It's not as easy just to get away for the weekend.
Well, in Virginia's, what, 6 hours?
It's a long drive.
I mean, if it was four, I mean, even maybe four and a half, but at six, I'm like, I can't even stand driving to Dover. I mean, I'm like falling asleep. It's just terrible. I just, a client of mine, my son David loves 21 Pilots, and I took him to see 21 Pilots at Firefly. In fact, we were with McKinnon.
Yes.
McKinnon. And Scott, when we saw him, but a client's like, I can't use these tickets. You want them? And I was like, and it's for 21 Pilots. And David, he's been trying to go see him. All his friends, of course, have gone. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take the tickets. Well, it's in Brooklyn. Yeah.
When?
It's like coming up.
Well, you're going to have to spend the night.
Yeah.
Because it's just far.
It's far. And it's like, it's not even far. It's like $15, $20 every bridge. And
oh, yeah. That'll be your summer vacation.
It's just one nut kick.
You know, Minnie lives in Brooklyn.
Does she?
She does. So maybe she can meet you for dinner or at least give
you
some.
Can we crash on her couch?
Have you ever seen New York apartments?
No,
they're like
I haven't.
This big. She has four roommates. It's her. They all have their own
bedroom.
Well,
what's three more then?
You know,
seven.
What? Call her.
No, No. First of all, Christine would be like, no, we're not staying. We're getting a hotel.
Oh, yeah. She would not love to sleep on the floor.
No.
It's different if you were just packing the boys.
If it was just me and David, it'd be one thing. But what the hell is going on here? I keep getting all these texts. Sorry.
It's all the people listening to the podcast.
The podcast is being recorded. It's not live.
Ah.
I will upload it. That way, if you have any discretions
I don't think I've said anything I regret yet.
Yeah, and honestly, people always say, oh, what will I say? An hour and a half later, I'm like, all right, shut it down. You had plenty to say. Well, and I did, Yeah, and one thing about doing podcasts, do you ever listen to podcasts?
Not much. I listened to one with Scott on our way to a movie that was kind of far away one time. I just don't.
I don't listen to podcasts either. I do listen to one, and I actually watch it because the guy, Joe Rogan, does a podcast, but he also videotapes it, and puts it on YouTube. And I love watching his podcast. And he has a lot of interesting people. I was watching one yesterday with this guy who, I'll have to look up his name, but he's a black guy. He was a bodybuilder. I don't know if he was an MMA fighter, but he was just a fit, you know, beast guy. Mm-hmm. And he started suffering from heart disease, which had run in his family. His older brother had passed away from heart failure or heart attack or whatever. And he was just, his heart had become very sick. And they said, would you like us to put a pacemaker in? And he said, well, my brother had died from a heart failure with a pacemaker. And he goes, I'm not sure why it would even help. They said, you know, you should have a pacemaker. So he had it put in, and he died. He had a heart attack, and the pacemaker, you know, fired off and restarted his heart, and he came back alive. But he said he woke up, he came back alive, and he was laughing and smiling, and he's like, I died, and I've been to this place that was just amazing.
Wow.
And he's like, you know, he goes, there's something else besides this life. And he's like, I was there. I was standing right there. I was, you know, I was alive and I was dead. I was awake. I could think about what was going on, but I had died. And then he came back and, you know, he ended up getting a heart, which the funny.
He got a heart transplant.
And, you know, this is a beast guy, you know. And they gave him an older woman's heart. And he's like, you know, he's like, I got so much faith and I, it's really questioned my faith. Why God, why did I get a woman's heart? And,
did it change him?
It did. And in fact, it didn't change him. Well, first thing is that the heart, apparently it was a small, he goes, you got a woman's heart. The lady was older than you. And honestly, it's too small for your body. And he goes, why did you give me this heart? And he goes, we didn't want you to die. You were going to die. And before he left the hospital, before he was released, the heart had actually grown in size to fit his body. And he said that that was a miracle from God, but later he also would say that the heart can do that.
Does adapt.
It does adapt to what it needs to do.
Ah, wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so, but he says, I have this reoccurring vision. He goes, he doesn't know who the lady was that died, that donated the heart. Doesn't know anything about her, but he has this reoccurring feeling that he sees an Asian woman talking to a husband, and he feels like this lady, the lady was Asian. Like he's getting these memories or feelings or I don't know if premonition would be the right word, but these memories of another person, and he feels like the lady was Asian.
Can he find out?
I don't know if he can find out, but you know,
I thought
yeah, it was very interesting, and he also said that he's much more sensitive now, and it was interesting. I'll send you the podcast. I'll forward it to you.
That sounds really interesting.
I had a client whose husband just passed away. I just did her hair, in fact, and I was telling her about this podcast about this guy. He said that he, you know, when he came back from dying, he was laughing and smiling, and he said, I was gone for just a minute. But he said, I came to more rested and more relaxed and more at peace than he had ever been in his whole life. And he goes, I want to be here, but I'm not afraid to die. He's like, I'm looking forward to revisiting that, seeing that again.
Well, that's really hopeful, isn't it? It really makes you feel better about what might be on the other side.
My client that I was talking to, her husband just passed away, and I was telling her about this, and she goes, I got to tell you the story. My husband he had esophageal cancer, so they removed his whole esophagus, you know, and brought his stomach up basically right below his throat. Mm-hmm. And I guess he had died on the surgery, but they brought him back, or maybe they, whatever it was. But she walked into the recovery room, and her husband, who she said never smiled, she said he was a great guy, super nice guy, but he just wasn't a smiler. Mm-hmm. And she walked in there and he had this big grin on his face. And all he could say is, am I alive? And he had the same sort of story. Like he had been someplace that was just like he was standing next to his body while he was having this operation done. And he's like, he didn't want to die because he wanted to see his children and what would, you know, how they would turn out, you know. And I think
Was he sort of a young guy?
No, he was. No, I mean, he wasn't 80, but he probably wasn't 60 either. Mm-hmm. I don't want to call an age old, but, you know, he'd had a pretty good time. And he didn't want to die, but it wasn't because he was afraid of dying. It was afraid. He just didn't want to miss out on his family. And when I think about that, sometimes I'll be on the couch. I'm like, God, if I had a heart attack and just died right here, what would my kids do? You know, of course they would be sad, but they would be fine. They would make it. But I ended up watching this other podcast afterward about time and all this interesting stuff. And I don't watch them. But this one I do watch, I find very interesting because it has a lot of cool quantum mechanics and just stuff that I don't understand and could never learn, but I just sit there and listen. And
like, I don't think I do enough driving. I bet if I drove more, I would, do I need to be closer?
A little bit.
I think if I drove more,
you can pull it to you.
I would, listen more.
Well, so I've listened to since I've started doing podcasting, I've listened to some podcasts because I'm like, well, how bad or how far am I off from a professional podcast? And what I've heard is they're very professional. Dun, 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 you know, great music.
Oh, yeah,
music.
You need a theme song.
You know, da, 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 da. And what I'm finding is a lot of like CNN or these big companies, you know, podcasting has become popular. That's what from what I'm understanding, a lot of people are into podcasting. So they're just doing the news in a podcast version. But when you end up listening to it, it's sounds like almost like the news, but in a podcast version.
I have an idea for you. Go. You know Danielle? Danielle first?
Yep.
Okay. Danielle is a composer. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to commission her to write you a theme song.
How would it go?
I don't know.
What would be the theme?
I mean, she writes music for films and stuff, so I think she must be good at
figuring out the right feel. To afford her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just bringing up something that may not be possible, but wouldn't that be so fun? She knows you. She probably has a sense of who you are.
I should ask
her. She could probably sit down and come up with a little tune that's Tom-ish.
Well, I have a little bit of a funny story. This guy, you know, I started doing the podcast, and this guy, his name's Brian Mann. He is running the Big Fish Charitable Foundation, and he reached out to me and he goes, hey, I had another friend of mine, Ed Brown, on earlier when I first started, and he goes, I grew up with Ed Brown. I went to school with Ed Brown, and I learned more about Ed Brown on your podcast than I'd ever even known about Ed Brown. Mm-hmm. He goes, can you show me how to do a podcast? And I was like, yeah. He came on, and I just told him a few things, you know, and we had a great podcast, and he actually just came back on, but he goes, here, I want you to listen to this. And I go, what am I listening? He goes, this is my theme music for my podcast that I'm starting. I'm like, you got theme music? It's like, dun, 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 dun. You know, I'm like.
Did he just lift it from somewhere? I mean, or did he have.
No, you know what it was? He actually got, what was that? Remember back in the like 70s, there was that news show with, you know, the white-haired guy, Ted, I forget his name, and.
Was it the Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Okay, Ted, I know who you mean.
Ted Baxter,
yes,
was it?
Yes, yes, yes.
I think he got the music from that. I think he purchased it.
That's fun.
It was like $10 he bought it for. Uh-huh. And I was like, geez, now do I need a music? But
you probably could just go on a search for, at least with songs, it's called public domain. And if music is in the public domain, it's free for you to use.
Yeah.
You might want to just check that out, but I think you should talk to Danielle.
If I was going to do music, I would talk to Danielle. But honestly, I mean, I just like, you know, to me, what's more important, some music or can I try to figure out? Doing podcasting, I've had to learn a few things. One is to listen. You know, it's mm-hmm. hard to listen. Mm-hmm. Two is, you know, when we're talking about something and then I can easily go off on something else. And then we get totally derailed from the first topic like we were originally talking about when we were talking about the theater. But, you know, trying to figure out how not to let that happen, to listen, to try to guide the conversation. You know, there's a lot to it. I'm trying to focus on that. Content, trying to find fun people to talk to. Music, if I can start getting that better, then maybe I'll start looking for some music. But it's
It's not high on your list of priorities.
It's not high on my list. I mean, just really, I mean, I'd honestly like to videotape it, but I thought, let me just get, because honestly, right now I can do this podcast and I can upload it and just be done with it. I don't have to, when I was doing the vlogging, I don't know if you ever remember that, but I used to do the vlog and I would have to spend a couple hours each night editing.
Right.
You know, tying music in. And if you, one thing bad about music is that if you at some point play something that is not yours, even a small version of it, and I I don't do this for money, so I don't put it on YouTube. I don't have a monetary...
you don't gain money from it, so you don't have to do a lot of the legal...
Right, and there's... Things. But like I do like watching a lot of different other stuff on YouTube, and if you can't play any music, or they'll just demonetize the whole video, and it's tough because, you know, everybody wants to make sure they get paid for their work.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. I think that's great. Does, so what is the, are you going to do any more? I know you got to be something going on in theater that you're working on.
Well, I did a really fun fundraiser in February on the night before, the Academy Awards. And it was, we used a bunch of songs that have won Academy Awards or should have won Academy Awards. And it was like in we presented it as if it was our own Academy Awards show in Georgetown, Delaware.
Nice.
So that was really fun. I did that with Doug Yetter, who, you know, I'll tell you, and it's the same in every business. If you surround yourself with really smart, talented people, it's good for you, you know?
Yeah.
And I have had the great fortune of, I know and have worked with the people that you want to know and work with around here.
If you want to be doing theater.
Yeah. So that's the most recent thing I did. I don't have any show coming up.
So what
actually.
Is it? What do you raise funds for? Just theater? Are you raising funds for the theater? Or?
Yes. For instance, I mean, we needed a new roof. So things as basic as that. You need a new roof. You need to paint the building. You have to replace the lighting and sound because the technology changes so rapidly.
Right.
Just things like that, just things that keep the doors open.
So it's fundraising for the theater.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
So do you want to, I mean, do you got to find a show? I mean, what do you got to do? What do you got to do to get in the show around
right
here?
Now, I'm in charge of finding directors for the 2021 season. 2020 season. So my job is to put out information to the local, the tri-state area, get people interested in the shows that we are presenting, which we have already chosen, and then kind of walk them through. Yeah, I'll tell you what they are. In the winter show is the play version of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Do you know that? It was a really famous movie with Sidney Poitier, Katharine Hepburn, and Spencer Tracy.
Okay.
So it's the stage version of that. And it's about, it's very topical, and in fact, it's a little sad, really, to read some of these old plays that have themes of race, for instance.
Yes.
And that not enough has changed. This young white woman, invites her fiancé home to meet her parents. They don't know that he's a black man. And everyone who thinks they were perfectly open-minded and liberal until it's their family,
right,
struggles through the play, coming to terms with things they wish they didn't know about themselves, changing their perceptions and being honest, you know. So that's kind of a cool.
It's
cool,
that whole topic is strange, isn't it? It's like there was a time where we were very racist around the United States. I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, that's how the world was here, and then all of a sudden. And thank gosh, you know, we changed and, you know, things, but people act like it would never happen.
Well, and you know what was what has been so, and we digress, but what has been so disappointing to me is that I really thought when we elected Barack Obama,
yeah,
that there had been a huge change. And as it turns out, having an African-American president put such fear in people who didn't want to have an African-American president, that they have come back with a vengeance behind this current president.
Yeah.
And things are so much uglier than I ever wanted to know.
It is very, it's like, I always say it's like going all your life and then all of a sudden one day they decide, you know, now we're going to start eating cat, you know, and it's like, well, I don't like cat, but you got to eat it. Mm-hmm. Our kids, you know, or we have kids, and, oh, we like cat, you know, we start eating it right away. Mm-hmm. But then there's this generation, they don't like cat. And they'll say, okay, and they'll act like they're eating, but put them alone, off to the side, away from others, and they'll tell you for a half hour how much they don't like eating cat.
Yeah.
And it's like that older generation. But I don't understand why.
I'm not even sure it's age.
You don't think it's age?
I mean, yes, that has something to do with it, but I also think it's cultural areas of the country. You know, there are some crazy racist kids in Kentucky, for instance.
And I always say we live in a bubble here in Rehoboth. I mean, we do. I mean, for a long time, I mean, even when I very first moved here, we have a big population of gay people that live here and mm-hmm. always have. I mean, it's always been a safe place for that here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm cool with it. I don't care. But if you go into, like, you know, down south or other places, even to this day, not everybody is as open about certain things like that. But you think, because we live in this little bubble, we think the whole world's like that.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Right.
It's getting better. I definitely think that as far as that goes, it's definitely getting better. But
things are better, but not as good as you hope. You know, that just like, you know, the whole, all of that acceptance, just acceptance. I don't understand, and I never will understand why people have so much interest in what I do.
Right.
I, in quotes. I mean, not me personally, but like, what do you care? What do you care what I choose to do with my body? Does it have to do with you? And like, what does it have to do with?
You mean like transgender stuff?
Anything. You know.
Well, they always the hot spot is like bathrooms. That's, I think, you know, it's when there's, I think for those things, I think it's like when children are going to be, you know, crossing paths with people that are making decisions like that, I think right away people automatically think that since people are changing their body, they're automatically after the kids or something like that.
Which is so crazy if you think about it.
It is crazy.
That we think, I mean, there are still people that think homosexuals are all pedophiles. And think about that. Isn't that outrageous and stupid?
It is stupid. It's very stupid.
And yet
stupid.
There are people that think like that. Honestly, it's nuts.
You know what's funny is if I'm coming into Wawa, and this happens a lot, you know, in an African-American or I guess that's what we say, African-American person is walking in, and I make eye contact, and I hold the door open for them, and they look at me, and they say, thank you very much. It's like one-on-one, we're cool. But then when society comes in and, like, influences, like, oh, you know, white people are what, or black people are this, and that's what creates, it seems to create, like, problems. But one-on-one, like, I can walk up to any black and be like, hey, man, what's going on? Hey, man, or, like, I was running this morning, there was these two guys that were working. I was like, good morning, and they're like, what's up, my man? You know, like, one-on-one, everybody seems to be great. But when you get in groups or influenced by other people's opinions or... It's very strange.
It's mob mentality. That's, you know, it takes over.
It's unfortunate. And but yeah, we live in a bubble, and you know, I've sometimes I think I'd love to move to Albuquerque, or I'd love to move to Florida, or I'd love to move somewhere else. But then I think, could I do this? Would I do here, there? Could I make a little salon in Albuquerque? I don't think so. It's a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more people, a lot more, there's a lot of poverty in Albuquerque, actually, now that if we're going to discuss that a little bit, but I was a little surprised by that. There was actually, like, people sitting on every corner with a sign.
Mm.
Where here, maybe we have a person that does it. I've seen a couple people do it, but every corner out there, it's just...
Bigger places have bigger problems.
Bigger places have bigger problems.
That's you're right about small areas providing different opportunities for you. Like I've often thought I've had the opportunity to write and direct a few shows here, and I'm thinking, you know, well, where else would I have been able to just say, here, I have this great idea that your theater is going to let me do, and you know that wouldn't happen just everywhere.
No, we're small enough that you can do stuff like that, but we're big enough that you have to be, they're not taking just anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, I can take out, you know, I can farm and I could also direct the theater.
That's right.
I mean, that's a couple towns over. But here, you know, we're a little bit bigger. You're like, I got some skills and some experience in doing this. Great. Come on. We want you. Bring you in. So that's, you know, it is nice about it. How come Lewis doesn't have more like theater?
Like a theater?
A theater.
I don't know. I mean, maybe we're close enough to both Rehoboth and Georgetown. And, you know, there's a theater in Milton now that mostly brings acts in, but they do performances there occasionally. There's a theater in Milford. Maybe Lewis just doesn't need one. Exactly. There seem to be a lot of opportunities for visual artists in Lewis, you know, in the Historical Society, and they just have different interests.
Are you into the Historical Society? Do you like the historical side of things?
I love history.
Yeah.
But I am not particularly a museum person. I love to read about history.
Yeah, I like to hear about it. I just don't need it in my entryway.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to be joining the Historical Society when I retire.
My dad's like, you don't care about any of these old pieces that I have. You know, he's got a dining room table that's however many years old. And these
to you, antiques. It's like an old table. I'm like,
no, I don't care. Like, and there, you know, where I know other people would be like putting sticky notes on all this furniture of their parents, you know, fighting over these antiques. I don't know if it's about the antique or the value. Like, oh, I could sell this one day or something.
Well, we did that. You know, my parents were... they did everything they possibly could to make sure there wouldn't be any fighting or misunderstandings between my brother and sister and I when they were gone. And so we literally one summer did walk around their house, and they lived in, you know, one of the small little colonial houses in Lewis. So they didn't have a bunch of stuff, but they had some really beautiful family pieces. And we literally walked around and took turns, like, Rick, put your post-it on something. Daddy, put your post-it on something. Then Donna's turn. And then we would go through the house, and we did that. And it did make it really simple. And also, we were lucky that none of us really all wanted the same stuff.
Yeah, because that's...
But it did mean to... It meant stuff... It meant something to us because it was a family piece. I don't think we would have cared if we'd seen that table in a store.
I think it's strange how we don't have family pieces anymore.
Well, I think we do.
But, I mean, is it from the past? I mean, or have you purchased something lately that you will see being passed on as
a
family piece?
We've purchased some art. More, you know what? More we have, like, pieces of jewelry, I bet, that will be passed on. But that's because we've got girls, maybe.
Well, and jewelry's different. But I'm talking about, like, antiques. They just, first of all, I don't think they make anything to last anymore. I mean, I think it's all built with, like, a 5, 6, 7 year... bomb in it. So
yeah, there's not much like furniture wise that I know that the girls will care about.
Right.
Having.
Right. It's funny. I have this old cheap, you know, very simple refrigerator. I've had the thing, it won't die. It just keeps on going. Where my parents have had these, you know, these new
big fancy ones.
Big fancy refrigerator that's being wheeled out every 4 or 5 years, and I'm like, you know, you just need the simple refrigerator. I mean, did I tell you about this new program I'm doing called Just Supper?
Mm-mm.
Did you hear about it?
No.
So I just eat supper?
You know what? Scott did tell me that you only eat one meal a day?
I only eat one meal a day.
And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing it, I think, 9 weeks.
Really?
Uh-huh.
So how does that work? Like, how's your energy level through the day if you don't eat until night?
I feel terrific.
Does your stomach grumble and carry on? Mine would.
I don't know. A little bit. I mean, 9 weeks later, you know, first of all, I realized that I eat a lot of food because I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
Food is it's a great icebreaker, you mm-hmm. know, over conversation. Let's meet for, you know, something.
Right.
I mean, you just eat. It transitions me. Like, I used to have, like, I'd finish a client, then I'd go eat some almonds, you know, almonds and cheese because it's healthy. You know, and I'd walk out to the next client chewing, welcome, how you doing? I had a relationship with breakfast. I had a relationship with lunch.
And you broke up.
I broke up. You know, I was doing a lot of running. I was running about 20, 25 miles a week. I'd run 5 miles a day, some days every day, some days just a few days of the week. And if you're running like that, you can eat whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I started having some foot problems. So I couldn't run, and I was putting on weight. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You know, what? I'm like, I don't even know why I'm eating. I've lost really contact and understanding what that's all about. So I started doing this thing, just supper. And the only reason I call it just supper is because I can't stop snacking at night. So I can eat from 7 to midnight, that window. So usually, like, I'll have dinner and I can
still... Is 7 o'clock not, that's not too late for your kids? Or do you not eat with them?
They're not doing this.
No, but I mean, you said if you eat from 7 to midnight, do you eat dinner with them when
they're
home?
Yeah, we eat at 7, 6.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they, okay. That's not that late. And it's funny, if you watch kids eat, you start to understand how we're supposed to be eating. You know, every night, you know, let's eat. I'm not hungry. You know, they'll eat garbage, but, you know, they're not really hungry. And then when they really are hungry, they really eat.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten into this, you know, everything's based around, like, you know, father's going to the field. Let's all eat with father. Father's home from the fields. Let's all eat with father for lunch. Father's back from the fields. Let's eat, have dinner. And so I really lost. I didn't understand why I was eating at all. So I said, that's it. I'm just going to eat supper. And the first couple of days was, yeah, it was interesting. And I say this to people that, because I talk to people a lot about it, and I suggest it to people. And the first thing they say is, oh, my blood sugar would be just dropped too low.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, and I'm not sure about this, but this is how, and I had the guy on yesterday, and I said, you know, and I was talking to him about it. He's like, I don't know. And I go, why don't you try to become a professional of you? You know, why don't you learn to be a professional of you? You know, if you have this pain right away, oh, well, you need to eat. It's stomach's growling, you know. Is it? Or maybe it's just growling,
used
but that's
to it.
Yeah, that's
like
what it's doing. But
them.
Live through the growl, see what happens on the other side. You know, a guy was talking the other day about how breathing alone can adjust a lot of things. You know, anxiety, fear. You know, if you stop, breathe, you know, focus, adjust your breathing, you can work through a lot of things before medication or other stuff. And I'm not saying don't take medication. I'm clearly not a doctor, but. So, yeah, I had to break up with breakfast. And breakfast used to be this ritual. It was all healthy, you know, oatmeal, fresh blueberries, drizzle this, you know, local honey. It was a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Lunch, same thing. I had to break up with all of it. And so now I only eat supper. But now when I eat supper, I know what I'm eating. You know, like, let's have steaks. Let's have great broccoli. Let's have great, you know.
You make sure it's really balanced because you're not making up for it in any other meal.
Absolutely. And now I can afford organic. You know, before I'd be like, oh, I don't care about organic. But if it's the only broccoli I'm eating today, I'm going to make it organic.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to have something good, I'm going to have a nice steak. We have a lot of pork chops. We make a lot of, eat a lot of chicken, a lot of guacamole, a lot of avocado.
How is it medically? Like, have you checked with anybody if eating one meal a day is good for your body? Or are you just, like, counting on knowing how it feels?
Well, I think it's funny, like, that's the question. But how bad for us is it to eat so much food?
Well, that's bad. We know that's bad.
But we're like, oh, my God, are you okay? You've only eaten one meal. It's like, but nobody says, you know, they're saying that 2 out of 3 Americans are either pre- or post-type 2 diabetic. 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
That Americans are starting to become the biggest threat to America, past like Al-Qaeda, some terrorist organization. We have become our biggest threat is our health.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, no one seems to be concerned about that. You know, when you say, oh, I only eat one meal. Oh, my God. Are you going to be okay? So.
Well, what if you feel good.
I feel amazing. I feel so good. And I'm very focused on what I eat. Because it's my one meal,
mm-hmm.
But it still allows me to eat, like for dinner, like we'll make a steak, broccoli, a baked potato, butter, sour cream. You know, sugar got everybody fat. And now the fat people want to take all the good stuff out of the food, the fat, you know, the butter. You got to take all this out so that you'll lose weight. It's sugar that's gotten everybody fat.
It is.
So, you know, we eat butter. You know, there's a lot of great stuff in butter. Sour cream, have a great meal. A little bowl of ice cream. I even have snacks. I wake up the next morning. And I think, and I, like I said, I'm not a doctor, but I You know, like if all of a sudden you started feeling like weak or something, I don't think you could eat food and I don't think you could receive the energy from that food in that period of time. I think your stomach has to break it down. It has to start to be digested. Your digestion tract starts to pull the nutrients out. That doesn't happen in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes, the lady was just telling me, it takes like 6 hours to digest, to get food digesting. So I think just the thought of chewing makes people feel better. I don't think people even understand what's happening anymore with food.
What's the thought behind breakfast being the most important meal of the day?
I've never been
a big breakfast eater, but, you know, like we've always heard that.
Yeah, well, I'd like to know who they are because they are telling a lot of stuff. And maybe now, so if I'm hungry, I have fat. You know, our body puts the fat on our body for leaner times. You know, like, oh, geez, if we went back 500 years, you know, we'd wake up, you know, you'd open up the hotel. I'd say, we'll go get some meat. You get some something. And we'll come back and we'll prepare it. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're out searching for something and maybe you find like some fresh blueberries or something, yeah, you could eat them. But you come back and we eat it together. We work for it, we find it, and we eat it. Now we've become so entitled to this food. Like, oh, I'm hungry. Let me stop at Surf Bagel and get a sausage, egg, and cheese. Instead of like feeling the pain, you know, working through it, trying to understand, is it my hungry or is it just... You know, is this just right before my body starts feeding on all the fat that I've stored on it for these moments of lean times? Mm-hmm. And it's been a great experience for me. I had a lady that did it and she sent me a text and she's like, you know, I've just opened my eyes to why I eat, what I'm eating, and when I'm putting food into my, you know, what I'm putting in, I'm paying attention to all of it. Because before I would be like, are you hungry? Not really. All right, maybe I'll make us quesadillas or something with guacamole and we just eat it. And not even know why, because it's dinner.
Right.
And I had spaghetti and I had big bowl of spaghetti, one meatball, and then I had some ginger snap cookies with milk. And I ran 5 miles. I haven't eaten anything all day, and I ran 5 miles this morning. And
you've not eaten anything
nothing.
All day? Do you drink a bunch of water?
Oh, this is iced coffee.
That's wild. Well, if it works for you.
I mean, but...
It's very psychological, eating is, I think. You know, because even when you're not hungry, you might look forward to, what am I going to have for lunch? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's all that thought. And it's social. Like you said, meeting a friend for lunch. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Well, and I carry, I don't know, I had my gallbladder taken out a few years back, probably 12 years, I guess it's been now. And so, and I don't know if I feel like I carry a lot of weight in my intestines. Like, I'm always, like, sucking in my stomach. It's, like, always full. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm not even eating that much. I'm just always, ugh, it's, like, always sticking out. I hate it. And I'm, like, you know, so I always tend to suck my stomach in. And this lady was telling me, she goes, you know, they're finding that people that are always sucking in their stomach, it takes the curvature out of the bottom of their spine and sucks in your ass, so you have no ass at all.
Is that true?
It's true. If you suck in your stomach, it pulls your butt in, so you can hide it.
Uh-huh.
And then
and so it
starts,
throws your whole
yeah,
self Yeah,
it starts
off.
Affecting your lower back. And she goes, I just had to start letting my stomach hang out because I was doing that. And I was like, oh, my God, I've been sucking in my stomach for years. But I feel like I was holding a lot of weight in my intestines. Now when I eat... I feel the food doing it. Like I eat, I'm like, oh, my stomach is full. My stomach shrank, definitely. But my stomach is full. And then I feel my stomach kind of going not as full. And then I feel like my intestines getting full. And then, you know, whenever you end up using the restroom, but, I know what that's about. You know, before you use the restroom, you're like, well, I wonder what that was. I wonder where that was from. So it's been fun. I really have enjoyed it, and I feel so much better. And I'm not sure I'll stay like doing this forever, but I know now that I've gone on, I'm hearing a lot of these people. I was watching a podcast with this guy last night. He was saying that this kind of, they call it intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. I call it getting back to reality, because I don't know when we started serving so much damn food, but this intermittent fasting, but they're finding when you go long periods of time and then taking in the same amount of calories that you would take in throughout the day, maybe 18 to 2,000 calories, but just in a shorter window, that it helps you actually build stem cells.
Really?
Yeah, that help you like heal faster.
Huh.
I was like,
I have heard about that intermittent fasting. I literally have never fasted a day in my life, ever.
Yeah, and I don't know why you would have to.
I mean, I don't overeat either, but it's like the idea of not eating at all is crazy to me.
Yeah, but honestly, I feel like that's how it's supposed to be. You know, we are not supposed
to. Like some days you're just hungry.
You know, do you know what the appendix is for? The appendix organ in your body? The appendix.
No, I don't.
The appendix is an organ that helps you digest raw meat.
And that's specific.
Well, that's what it was for, and the reason we can take it out now is when we found fire, we started cooking meat, and it's not necessary. But our body, evolution or whatever, God got us to a point where it said, you need this organ, and it created it. Evolution, I think, if continuing the way we will eventually create an organ that helps us break down sugar, because we just eat a lot of sugar. I do, you know, I don't now. But when my window is open, I will, like, eat the hell out of some ginger snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And they were delicious with milk. And that's all sugar. So I'm an addict. But mm-hmm. we have an addiction to sugar. And it's weird. Like, yesterday I walked into Wawa. And on both sides of where I'm paying are piles of candy bars. They're pushing mm-hmm. the candy bars. But that is like, you know, it's not like piles of heroin or piles of crack. You know, which devastate families and ruin lives just as much sugar does, but we've accepted it, I guess.
And
now.
It's legal.
And so it's legal. And yeah. Someone's making some money on that sugar. So it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always, you know, it's weird how society. Do you find as you've gotten older, like you see just a lot of hypocritical kind of baloney?
Ugh, yeah. Yes. Honestly, I don't know why I think about this, but sometimes I do. The things that you would least want people to think about you. And one of those things is, for me, would be for people to think I was a hypocrite or if I was unreliable. Those two things, it would be devastating to me if I found out that, you know, indeed, oh my God, you know, all my life I thought I wasn't those things and apparently I am. And I would, hypocrite is terrible.
Well, and I'm a little, you know, Christine, she's, you know, a little younger than me, and she loves drinking Coke. She loves eating ice cream. And I think, you know, and I'm like, you know, I'm looking down my nose at her. I'm like, you're going to pay one day for all this bad eating, girl.
You know what? I ate ice cream every day for probably 20 years. When the girls were growing up.
Well, and she does.
I blame it on them.
But, you know, and I get critical and I look down my nose at her, but then at night, I eat like maybe 19 freaking ginger snaps and milk. So that's being a hypocrite.
Yes.
And I'm not sure what that's about because, like, sometimes it gets under my skin. Like, is that another Coke? What's the matter with that?
Well, you know, that's just, you need to mind your own business.
Hey, you need to take that nose and point it somewhere else, son.
I'm thinking a little Al-Anon here.
Oh, my God. I do like Al-Anon, actually. Now that's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast.
Well, listen, so I took you hostage. We talked for an hour and 10 minutes.
Did we really? So let me tell you the rest of the season of Possums,
yes,
just real quick.
Let's get
to
business.
So in the spring, we're doing Godspell.
You got 30 seconds of business.
Okay,
no,
we're doing Godspell in the spring of 2021 for around Easter time. Then a show called Hay Fever by Noel Coward, which is... an old, really famous play. Then the musical, The Producers. Have you ever seen that?
I remember the character.
It is wild and raunchy, and I will be so interested to see how that goes over.
Do you get to be in it?
I don't know that I'll be in that. There's not necessarily a part for me, but there is a chorus of old ladies who tap dance using walkers.
I see
so
you doing that.
I take that back. It's all about me.
How's your knee?
Not bad. I have
not
I get,
bad to like not do anything about it, or not bad.
Well,
is it,
I'm not getting a knee replacement anytime soon, because if I get cortisone shots every 3 months, I'm pretty good. And surgery doesn't suit me. I mean, I've never had a successful surgery.
Should have went to Choi.
No, he wouldn't have done the meniscus surgery that I had.
Just playing.
He would have. He probably would have had more
I
sense.
I hope you do another show. I was. I kind of got distracted. I wanted to tell you that when I watched you do Hello Dolly that night, I started crying, and I thought you were just terrific, and I was really, I was honored to be your friend.
Oh, because
I
so
thought
sweet.
You know that I
I'm so happy that you came. I mean, that means a lot to people yeah. that are in shows that their friends and family support them.
I've been to shows that aren't good.
Yes.
And you and James
I've been
never...
in shows that weren't good. Well, I've been bad in shows.
And I think that first night, I think that, I bet the second night was a little better, not on your part, but it sounded like, you know, everyone was still feeling their way to kind yeah. of harmonize and get together.
The second weekend of a show is always going to be better than the first weekend, just because you've found your
One of my favorite things about theater is there's always some character on the show that I just, like, always fall in love with. And besides, you know, your role, I mean, I think there was a guy that was in that was really funny. The
young one?
The young
Barnaby.
Guy. Yeah, and he just made a lot of funny faces and, you know,
He's a really talented kid. He's a senior in high school this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, he was great.
And he's going to go to college to study film and directing.
And just like the play that James was in.
Braden. Hello,
that's
Braden.
His name. Hey, Braden. and that girl that sang Telephone Wire in that play with James, I just thought she was awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved that.
That was a terrific cast.
Telephone Wire. I sing that sometimes. It's so silly. Will you come back?
I will be
How
delighted.
Was this?
This was fun. I mean, honestly, I've done one other podcast sort of thing, and if the host is easy to talk to like you are, the time just flies by, and there's never that silence, you know, there wasn't any weird
odd silence.
Awkward silence. So no, and it's fascinating. And you know what's cool, for me anyway, you always learn stuff from your interviewer.
Right.
As well as you hearing what I have to say.
Well, and I always say, if I can leave a podcast feeling just a little bit smarter, I think that's cool.
And I'm not going to eat food until night ever again.
No, but you know what? So you're going to make a joke of it, and
no,
I get it.
No, but I'm not actually making a joke of it.
It is a...
It was something I didn't expect us to talk about, but I find it interesting.
If you think about how time was 500 years ago, you know, I don't feel like our bodies evolved with the ability to get food, how that has evolved.
We still act like we're coming out of the fields.
Well,
and need to recharge or
But
refuel.
There's a reason why we, you know, we used to have to find... I mean, if we had to find and prepare every food that we ate, we would eat a lot less food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there was work involved, it's become so easy.
Yeah.
And I don't have any hate towards the food industry. I get it. But it's my responsibility to figure it out, because this country is, from what I'm being told, I have not checked the whole country with my eyes, but... There's a lot of fat people. And the worst part about it is you can't say anything. I had a lady here the other day she's fat. And I said, you should try my program. Why, am I fat? I said, yeah, you are.
Did you?
I did.
And how did that go?
I don't know. Maybe she won't come back. I don't care. It wasn't to hurt her feelings, but, you know, when do we start becoming accountable? How patriotic is it that if we were to have some sort of civil war, that half these people couldn't run to the fence and put a musket on the damn thing? I mean, when does that start to become not patriotic? You know, that's
right.
Kind of the hypocrisy I'm talking about. We pick and choose, and we find these like a Kaepernick or something, you know, whatever it is that we want to jump on and call not patriotic. When do we start looking at our own selves and say, look, you know, I'm becoming, especially with healthcare and how people are living and you know, the price of either start rewarding people that do take care of themselves. I don't know how that would happen, but I think it's a serious situation. And I did not, if I hurt her feelings, I'm sorry, but I want her to live.
Mm-hmm.
And both people that this other lady that did it, I won't read it, but she's like, thank you. I now look at everything that I eat. And why I'm eating it. You know, I always say you don't drive to Wawa, fill your car with gas, and then squirt another $10 on the floor and then some in the back seat, and then drive down to the next gas station and add more gas in. You drive till it's empty.
Right.
This is a vehicle, and we're lucky to have them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Thanks I appreciate for having you me coming on, Tom. My podcast.
Thank you. I loved it. It was great.
All right. Thank you, Donna. I'm going to post it tonight and check it out,
okay.
And hopefully you can come back and... We can chat about other junk.
Splendid.
All right. Bye, Donna.
Bye.